From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. In the Senate, both parties have waged war over President Bush's nominee to be ambassador to the United Nations. The White House insists that John Bolton has all the experience he needs to represent the country at the UN. But when it comes to other ambassadorships, experience isn't always necessary. There's often quite a different qualification: how much money you've raised for the president's last campaign. For decades, presidents from both parties have used ambassadorships as payback for their big-time fundraisers. NPR's David Greene introduces us to a few of President Bush's new ambassadors.
David Wilkins has been Speaker of the House in South Carolina the last 11 years. He was known for his weekly television show on South Carolina politics.
We now go to This Week in the House with Speaker David Wilkins.
But Wilkins recently said farewell. He's off to Canada to be the next U.S. ambassador. And in his last show, he had someone to thank, the president's top political advisor, Karl Rove, who called into the program.
And I really appreciate all your help, Karl. You've been great.
Well, Canada, as you know, is our biggest trading partner. It's our northern neighbor. We got lots of issues with Canada. It's an important relationship, takes a lot to manage it. And the president, it's particularly important to the Canadians and particularly important to the United States that whoever our ambassador be, somebody who's got the personal ear of the president and is seen as and is a close personal friend and political ally. So it's great that you're going to do this.
When first named, Wilkins agreed to an interview with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. The CBC asked Wilkins what seemed like a natural question.
You ever been to Canada before?
Many years ago, when I was in the Army station in Indiana, my wife and I visited Canada.
Oh, yes? Where'd you go?
Well, it was around the Falls area, Niagara Falls, back up in there around that area, as well as going, I guess, back west toward Indiana, obviously above Indiana. But I'd have to get out a map to tell you all. It's been 30-something years now since we were there, but we enjoyed our visit, and we cannot wait to get back.
Okay.
The CBC finished with a question about the Canadian national anthem.
Can you hum a few bars of O Canada?
I look forward to doing that for you at some point.
Okay.
In Canada, reaction to Wilkins' appointment was mixed. Some news stories focused on his political ties, suggesting Canada could benefit from an ambassador who can get Mr. Bush on the phone quickly. But the Calgary Sun hinted that the appointment reflected tense relations between the two countries over the war in Iraq and other issues. "We knew Bush was mad at us," the paper said in an editorial, "but couldn't he have found someone who knows a little more about our country than the fact that it's north of his?" Wilkins did chair the president's campaign in South Carolina in both 2000 and 2004, and he ranks as a ranger in the Bush fundraising hierarchy. That means he gathered more than $200,000 in contributions for the president last fall. Wilkins joins a tradition of political fundraisers turned ambassadors. Perhaps the most famous was Joseph Kennedy, the father of the future president. Joe Kennedy had been a money machine for Franklin Roosevelt, who made him the first chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and then appointed him ambassador to Great Britain in 1938. Kennedy accepted the job despite warnings from friends that his lack of experience could hurt him.
America's new ambassador to Britain, Joseph P. Kennedy, is welcomed by the Lord Mayor on his arrival in Plymouth. And what do you think he finds all England interested in? You guessed it, his 9 children. So much so that in London, Mr. Kennedy has to issue a public explanation.
We're not wishing to add to the housing problem of England and make it any worse than it is, I'm bringing them over in installments. 5, 2, and 2.
Kennedy's time in London was rocky. He defied Roosevelt by publicly calling for the United States to stay out of World War II. Most ambassadors come up through the Foreign Service, especially those sent to hotspots like the Middle East. But in administration after administration, the number remains roughly the same. About 1 in 3 American ambassadors come from the ranks of presidential friends and financiers, with no background in diplomacy. Mark Evans Ostad, a former television broadcaster and Republican donor, was sent to Finland to be ambassador in 1974. In 1981, President Reagan tapped him for a second tour, and Ostad recorded the call.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, Mr. President, you're an answer to dreams and my prayers. I will do it with 150% of my effort.
Ostad came home 2 years later after police found him causing a disturbance on a woman's doorstep in the middle of the night. He said it was a mistaken address. Chester Crocker, an assistant secretary of state under Reagan, who now teaches at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service, said there have been times when, after chatting with an ambassador-to-be, he thought the White House had made a bad choice.
Certainly with the non-career ones, yeah, I've experienced that. Often you don't need more than about a 20-minute conversation to realize that you're basically dealing with a blank slate.
But Crocker said many non-career ambassadors do a fine job overseas, especially if they bring some of the people skills they learned as fundraisers.
I'm not terribly troubled if a person hasn't got a doctorate degree in French history and we send them to Paris. What's important is, are they credible personalities who have the right chemistry both at home and in France?
Until last year, Catherine Todd Bailey was in Kentucky running a charity. She was also a mainstay of state Republican politics and another Bush Ranger. And last fall, she was off to Latvia as ambassador.
In my situation, it's in my nature to network, so I see that as a part of my job that I bring to Latvians, by bringing Latvians together with one another and to bring Latvians together with Americans in many areas. You know, we're able to network people through business, through politics, and through culture.
Bailey hasn't fully let go of home. She's opened an exhibit in Riga featuring Kentucky quilts. She's also been distracted by a lawsuit filed by a neighbor back in Louisville. The lawsuit charged that Bailey's pit bull has still been in the neighborhood while Bailey's been off in Latvia, violating an agreement the Baileys had reached to get rid of the dog. When we asked Bailey about the lawsuit on her cell phone in Riga, the interview came to a close.
I don't mean to be cutting you short just because of that, but I am going to have to be going to get on this call with the Prime Minister.
That's the kind of phone call David Wilkins will be making in Canada. Wilkins has been confirmed by the Senate. He was to present his credentials in Ottawa today. Wilkins was in Washington recently for ambassador training, and in the lobby of his hotel, he reflected on that CBC interview. He said he was assured there wasn't going to be any Canadian trivia, or he wouldn't have agreed to it.
You know, I think to get off on how many times you've been to Canada is really just that's just chasing down a bunny trail. It doesn't really have anything to do with whether or not you're going to do well in your new job. And I'm certainly going to work at doing well.
Wilkins passed on an earlier opportunity when President Bush was considering him for Chile. Why say yes to Canada? One reason, Wilkins said, is it's close enough that he can get back to South Carolina to visit. David Green, NPR News.